Hello, listeners. Nicholas Marco here, and I am the Opportunity Coach. I am here to turn curiosity into conversation on entrepreneurship and everyday success. I am an entrepreneur who has started thriving businesses across multiple industries, and I found that there just isn't a playbook to solve every problem in business. I know now that you must change your lens on how you look at these situations, because every problem is an opportunity. We will drop a new episode on the first and third Thursday of every month. And on these episodes, I will be bringing to you top-notch leaders, executives, founders, and disruptors from all industries, sharing their stories of hurdling obstacles and forging new paths to achieve their goals. My content will propel you into a position to score success. All I ask is you pause and listen, learn and reflect, then go act. Opportunity awaits, so off we go! Hi, everyone. It's Nicholas Marco here, the Opportunity Coach, where I help put my listeners in a position to succeed. And today, oh my gosh, I am so excited to introduce all of you to a name that all of you already know. All throughout the world, she is in every house. As you watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey, she's been on this show for over 7 years, and she is an amazing entrepreneur who has founded many, many companies and a new brand she recently just launched that we will talk about. She tells it like it is. She's such an authentic, amazing person that I love very much. We've become such great friends over the years, and I'm just such a huge fan. So I welcome Margaret Josephs.
Oh, Nick, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. What an introduction. Thank you so, so much, and congrats.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You are such a huge supporter of people that you are bringing into your life. And I just so appreciate that about you. I think that that's such an amazing recipe to being successful, is just being supportive of all those around you. I think that that's an aspect of this new brand that you launched that we're going to talk about, co-founding it with Lexi, who I know you really care about very much as well. But everyone knows you from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. The Real Housewives of New Jersey was not your mission, was not your end goal. Frankly, you turned them down, from what I understand. So who is the Margaret Josephs before Real Housewives of New Jersey? Give us a little flavor of that.
It's true. Housewives was not on my bingo card. I always had a business. I always was an entrepreneur. I had a very successful company doing very well, Macbeth Collection in licensing, and Candy Couture, that was doing unbelievable prior to Housewives. I was always on TV being a lifestyle expert. I was on Rosanna Scotto. I was on the Today Show. I was on a lot of TV things. And truthfully, Joe and I were filmed quite a few times with different production companies, 495 being one of them that does Jersey Shore for our own show called Pigtails and Power Tools. And I was a little cocky. I was like, I'm getting my own show. It's going to be about business. It was going to be about women in business, fun, and things like that. And I was doing great. So when Housewives came to me, and actually I said, oh, I'll just video for it and everything else. And Lucilla, and she'll admit this, Lucilla, who was running Housewives at the time, called up and said, you know, Bravo wants you to do it. They want to pick you. I was like, oh, no, I'm not doing it. I don't need to do it. I'm getting my own show. I was very cocky. It was the year of the twins. So the funny part was, fast forward, life does not always turn out as you plan it. My trajectory was going up. I had some very bad lawsuits that no one knows that's going to happen. It's just as fast as you go up is just as fast as you could come down. No one plans for that. Housewives came back to me, and one of my licensees was like, you better figure out how you're going to get yourself on TV and get some press or get something, because your bank account is frozen.
Jeez.
You have a lot of bad things that have happened, and you have to reinvent yourself. And it was just very serendipitous. I was at a very low point in my life, and Housewives came back and said, we need a housewife. We're going to start filming in a few weeks. And I was like, I'm coming on this show. and that's how it happened.
So a lawsuit, right?
More than one, by the way.
Yeah. So how can we learn from your experience? What was really the big takeaway?
Oh my God. I did so many things wrong. Business people are business people. They're not your friends, business partners. Protect yourselves. Protect yourself. Have everything in writing. Make sure when you are sued, I just did this with my attorney, that You immediately take yourself, so you're not personally liable. Things like that happen. Have the proper insurances in place. There's just certain things that I didn't know. I was very personally intertwined with people I did business with. I trusted people. I always felt like, oh, this isn't going to end. We're doing so great. We were innovators. You know, I was always in St. Bart's. I was traveling. Joe and I would go to Europe on a whim. You know, we grew very quickly. I was very confident. And that's the things that happened. I didn't have the right protection in place. And I didn't understand it. But I also, you know, it's business. That's what it is. And when you friends in business don't mix, it's just you could be friendly with the people afterwards, but everything has to be in writing. Everything has to be buttoned up. And I didn't do those things. And I wasn't as smart or savvy. My success after years of hard work and came licensing, and I didn't wrap it up very quickly. I didn't, you know, I wasn't buttoned up, and everybody has to be buttoned up. Everything has to be in writing. And it hurt me.
Yeah. But I so appreciate how open you are about it, because for one, it was an amazing learning experience, but it didn't discourage you from giving up to doing more and more from a business perspective.
No.
And why was that? Did you ever consider, like, because business is scary when you go through what you went through. Did you think to yourself, I'm not going to do more business? Did you consider it, or did you ever have a second thought?
You know, I cried. I was freaked out, but I was like, I'm not going to let this get me down. I was successful in licensing. I wanted to fix it and just pull myself up my big girl panties. That wasn't somebody who I am. I grew up with a single mother. She was a hustler, but I was not going to let myself get down. I have a lot of people that relied on me. I had a team who had stood by me. I was not going to let them see me drop the ball and be like, all right, go find other jobs. I was like, this is not going to happen. I was very successful. I wasn't going to let the brand go to shit, in other words. And I wasn't going to let that happen. And the truth is, the bigger you are, everybody has a lawsuit. Things happen.
Yeah, it's so true.
The biggest companies, it happens all the time. You become a target. You just have to protect yourself and actually financially plan for these type of things. When people attack you and they're like, oh, you did something wrong. No. That doesn't mean somebody did something wrong. Unfortunately, in this country, anybody can sue anyone. This country is very litigious. You just have to have protections in order, and you have to be able to plan for these things. And I knew that I'm just going to move forward, one foot in front of the other. And I enjoy working. I enjoy being creative. You know, work is just not about making money for me. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the hustle. I mean, I'm not somebody who's just going to stay home and play tennis all day. That's just not me.
Yeah. Your secret weapon, honestly, is your resiliency. The fact that you put yourself in these positions where you are responsible for other people, and even going through what you've been through professionally to not give up, you just have this tenacity about you that is so infectious. And it's important, because I feel like there's just many people in the business that once things go south, they don't handle it well. And part of their demise is not what actually occurred to them. It's how they handled it. And I watch you like a hawk. The way you handle adversity, whether it's on this reality show or in business, you're so naturally talented at navigating through communication. And it's really inspiring.
Thank you so much. You know what? It's funny you say that. I was having a deep conversation with my kids, my family members. And I just said, you know, resiliency is a very underrated quality. I think we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah.
And I think in business, that's what's very important. It's about the way you take the setbacks. And low resiliency, I guess, is a quality that I do not like in people. When someone isn't resilient, I think we have to teach that there are setbacks. Life is complicated. Business is even more complicated. And if anybody thinks it's going to be a smooth sale, it's not. You know as well as I do, there are no overnight successes. People are like, oh my God, everyone thinks everybody's from the Lucky Sperm Club or someone made it overnight and it's not hard work. That's just not the way it is. So I think resilience is a quality that people have to work on in themselves. And it's true. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a very nice compliment.
Oh my gosh, no problem. And it's hard to be that way though, if you're on the island, because you got to surround yourself with people that are expecting the changes. They're expecting the challenges. If my team was rolling their eyes or huffing and puffing every time we had to pivot, right? Like I could never function in that environment. Do you look for that? Is that what you gravitate towards as far as people that work for you?
You know, Lexi and I have been together 16 years. She has helped me grow my business. And that's why I started a new company with her. Her resilience is unbelievable. Her passion, her drive. Her and I always say we are very similar. I mean, granted, she's the younger, taller, blonder British version of me. But we're both only children. We both had setbacks in our life, but both have bounced back and come back stronger. And we have a very similar philosophy on life. We don't let things get us down. Laughter, I always say this, gets you through a lot. You have to be able to laugh and make fun of a lot of tragic situations. It's not that we're being callous or anything like that. It just helps you get through. And it's a great coping mechanism. And her and I do that a lot. And we have a very similar sense of humor. But she has helped me get through the hardest, darkest times of my life and vice versa. And we have grown through these things. Our entire team, I feel, is very resilient and we bond over these things. So I think that's what's helped me grow. And that's why I've started this company with Lexi, because everything that she's done for me in my life, I was like, she has to have a company as well to be successful. So that's why we started this company together. She deserves to own it. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, Nick, you have to have a team around you. That's like one bad person on your team with not the same philosophy as yourself will screw up your whole team, could screw up your whole business. Totally.
Culture, right? It's everything. Culture. Whether you're a 5-person operation or a 1,000-person operation, the culture, one person really can totally disrupt it and get in the way. So let's brag about this amazing new company, because if you're listening, how good can you feel that these two women that are founding Soiree, 4 different flavor options currently. So talk about this, because you don't drink, right, Margaret?
I don't drink any alcohol. I don't. Not that I never drink, not that I haven't had a drink in my life, but I grew up, you know, with Little Marge Singer, who's a known cocktailer, much better now, but growing up, not the healthiest situation. So turn me off to drinking. And, you know, I'm on a show with some people who do drink, and I never felt the need to drink or feel like I needed the liquid courage or, you know, listen, I'm not judging anybody who does drink, because, you know, my husband loves to drink and he's adorable when he does, but I wanted everybody to feel part of the party. And I always felt like there was nothing interesting to drink. I'm drinking an iced tea. I'm drinking a diet soda. And I was like, what makes me feel like I'm drinking something special? I always wanted a fancy drink. From a little girl's drinking a Shirley Temple. What's a grown-up version of a Shirley Temple that I could drink and feel comfortable? So we came out. I said, Lex, let's create something. So we came out with Soiree, a ready-to-drink mocktail in a very sexy, slim can. It's 45 calories.
45 calories. That's amazing.
Yeah, 45. It's all natural. We have great 4 flavors, but also people use it as a mixer. And I love it. We launched last summer. It'll be on the show this year. The first year, listen, again, I knew nothing about this business. We started it. I'm like, all right, we did the flavors ourselves with a flavor house. It took us like 18 months in development. I did focus groups. I put my own money into it. I took my housewife money and put that into it. So everyone's like, why don't you finish your house? Well, I've put hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, which my house is almost, you know, but I've taken my hard earned money, my personal money, put it into this business to grow it. Beverages take a lot of money, invested in this. We believe in it and it's fantastic. But the first year was bumpy. We made mistakes. There's things that I didn't know. We screwed up some things.
What was the biggest like, uh-oh?
People take advantage. People, you know, the uh-oh was like,
okay,
you know, we ordered, just for argument's sake, it's just, everything's different. You get your flavors one place, you work with somebody who's a co-packer, you know, they fill it, but you can't order the boxes. You can only order the boxes that the product, let me just show you the boxes that the product goes in.
Wow. Paper, beautiful.
Yeah. They're great. They're packs of 4. You can only order that only lasts for 3 months, not being put together. So the person told us you got to order a ton in advance to get the right property. So this stuff was sitting in the warehouse and the boxes went bad. So I overpaid and, you know, just stupid things. The cans expired. They tell you to order extra cans just, you know, so they can make money. It's like stupid things that we didn't know. You cannot sell non-alcoholic beverages in liquor stores in New York.
Okay.
In New Jersey, you could sell non-alc. But in New York, liquor stores can't carry non-alcoholic beverages. Of course, I have all these friends that own liquor stores in New York. One of my best friends owns things out in the Hamptons. He's like, I can't carry your product. I'm like, what? Oh my God. Because we're selling liquor stores in New Jersey. There's a lot of rules that we didn't know about. We learned on the fly. 2024 has started off magnificently. We are going to be selling some stadiums. We're already going into the Chicago White Sox Stadium.
Wow. Congratulations. That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. We are trying to secure some more. We just branched out into Houston to do with the Le Meridian Hotel Group, which also owns the Kimpton Hotels. It's going into there in Dallas. So Texas wasn't on our bingo card, but that just happened. And we were there at the rodeo and we're working with a company called Maven Coffee, hopefully partnering with them. We're going to come out with a coffee flavor because you know I'm a big iced coffee drinker.
Yes, you are.
a very fancy iced coffee drinker, but more of like a coffee soda type thing, a coffee soda with some special different flavors in it that we will do coming out in the summertime.
So how big is your team now at Soiree?
Oh, it's still pretty tight. In-house, we have five people on Soiree that work on Soiree. We've taken in a COO, another woman, Lisa Powers, who's great. But we also are working with a different co-packer. We're working with a different warehouse. So you're working with all different people, but we figured this out. This is a male dominated industry, but female founders are taking over. And I think this is a great step in the right direction. You know, we're making some noise. It's going to be your sexiest dry spell. And we're not taking out the people that drink because they could use it as a mixer.
Right. Seems like you're just rolling with the punches as you should be.
Exactly.
And that's what I love. You've found other ways to distribute the product, not maybe your typical way, which is fun because it's an experiential brand in many ways. And I think the challenge for you is just continuing to market that message.
Exactly.
You know, look at your background right now. You are just the life of the party and it's amazing.
I am the epitome of a party, making memories, a celebration. I am very much like that. And that's what it is. So that's what I'm saying. Some mocktails, and I'm not going to... are just like keeping out the drinkers. We're not that. We want everybody to party together. And that's what we're about. It's about an experience and enjoying the moment and people partying together. And that's really what I've always been about. Drinkers and non-drinkers together, enjoying the moment and having a super fabulous soiree. And I think that's why we came out. And we're good, clean fun. No adaptogens, no CBD. Nothing else in it. Pregnant women can drink it. And I think that's what's important also. We're not trying to be something we're not. We're not a faux alcohol. We don't need to be that. We just want a crafted mocktail that tastes great, that people who are choosing not to drink for whatever reason can drink it, and making it easy to spike for the people who want to.
I love it. When it comes to your confidence in what this product is and the messaging that you want out there, you are so locked in, and that's incredible.
Thank you so much. Yes. Yeah. We know what we are and we know what we're not. And I think that's very important in business also is more importantly, you know that, Nick. I mean, you are such,
yep.
I mean, I look to you for advice many times because you're such an amazing entrepreneur and built so many businesses. It's very important to know what you're not good at as well.
Yeah. So is there some themes in that with your other brands? Talk to me about your whole entrepreneur picture when it comes to this new brand. Amazing. I see the things you're learning and another really great start to this year. But Macbeth Collection is still going strong.
Yes.
And there's Candy Couture. So the first company you ever owned was what?
The first company I ever owned was Macbeth Collection. That was, and you know, the world was very different then. I started that a very long time ago. That was 1999. There was a lot of smaller stores, you know, mom and pop stores, home design stores, things like that. And everything was made in the States. We're very big into monogramming. It was about print and pattern. We designed all our own prints and patterns in-house. I had a full design staff at the time. I was more creative design director. And we did things like that. It was all home accessories with prints on them and you can monogram them. We were on the O list, I think 6 times or something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we got a ton of press. And it was unbelievable. We sold to everybody from Neiman Marcus to like stores in your town. Everybody. And it was amazing. But then larger retailers started coming to us, and then we got into licensing. And licensing is what really blew us up, but it took us out of the luxury market into the market for the masses. And I think that changed the way we did things. So Candy Couture really was the little sister Macbeth collection. Macbeth collection was like a more little sophisticated style. Candy Couture was the little sister of it. So we immediately were in cosmetic bags, beauty tools, and things like that. And that's a very big Walmart brand, which is still in there, doing very, very well. And I promote that all the time. That's just one of my great partners, this gentleman, Ralph, who I've been in with since 2009. He has really pushed our brand and done very, very well with it. We do reading glasses with another partner. You know, people don't understand licensing sometimes. They think you're manufacturing it. You're not. You're doing the design directive. It's other people who make the products, and you're getting paid on royalty. It's just they're using your name, your design direction, and selling the items into the retailers. And that's really the way brands blow up. I think licensing fell off a little during COVID. We took a little step back during COVID. We took a hit. Some of my licensees could not sustain staying in business during that. Like my luggage licensee went out of business then, and a few of my other people. But now we're still doing that. I still have a steady business with that. And it's going well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Licensing, people don't always know what that even means, right?
Yes.
So at the end of the day, you're getting paid to allow them to use your brand. And then they kind of take over a lot of the operational aspects of that.
Oh, totally. Yes. They take over the operational aspects, the selling, and your name is getting it in there. But Lexi and I are pretty much hands-on with things like that. Looking at the packaging, looking at the product, promoting it via social media, making sure the quality is good and things like that. But we've been very lucky. You know, selling a Walmart where our stuff, great quality, could go to the masses and available to everybody was always very important to me because let's face it, the 1% is the 1% and what they could afford. And that's not the mass. And that's not where the money is, truthfully.
Right.
Luxury brands that are around have been around. I don't know if you're watching, the new look, but the luxury brands that have been around, the Gucci's of the world, the Chanel's of the world, the YSL's of the world have been around since before World War II. You can't name a new luxury brand. You really a new luxury brand that's been sustained that hasn't been around forever. The brands that, you know, there's the mid, you know, the mid tier, but most of America, most of the world isn't the 1%. That's why it's called the 1%. You know, are shopping in these stores, and that's where the money is to be made. We have to cater to the masses.
What is the top selling product in those brands?
The Candy Couture, the beauty line. The beauty line sells very well. You know what? Listen, even when things are down and times are tough, you know, a little makeup brush, a little beauty sponge. You want to make yourself feel better, so our beauty brand is always selling well. The beauty tools are selling well, which makes me very happy.
Love it. You're selling a lifestyle. That's what your brands are all about. What's the big takeaway that you want your fans to get from reading your book?
Oh my God. My book is just like, where you start in life does not determine where you're going. You can always change your path and your trajectory. And I think a lot of people don't realize that there are going to be setbacks, but the comeback is always stronger. And I think that's because, listen, I was brought up by a single mother in the 1970s. It was not very common then. And, you know, I easily could have been a drug addict or a stripper any day of the week, the way I grew up. It's an absolute fact. And when you read my book, you can see that. But that it never held me back or determined my path in my life. And nothing deterred me from where I was going. And I think if you believe it and manifest it, it can happen. I don't care what anybody says and people say that's bullshit. It's not bullshit. I try not to put those negative thoughts in my head. I always, you know, it's kind of funny. I always thought, you know, I was a big deal, whatever it was, even when I was a little girl. It's a very funny,
yeah.
It's a very funny story. There's one story in the book that I crack up at. My mother, Listen, she was 20 years old when she had me. She left my father by the time she was 21 and a half. He was abusive. Thank God she had supportive parents, my grandparents, everything else. But I'm in kindergarten. I'm 5 years old. I mean, I was drinking coffee for breakfast and eating Oreo cookies. That's a fact. I go to school. They ask, Mrs. Dietrich asks, going around the class, what did you have for breakfast? And it was like pancakes, eggs, everybody. I could not wait till they got to me. They go, Margaret, what did you have? I said, I had coffee and Oreo cookies. The gasp of, oh! Yeah. You know, CPS now would like probably take your kids away, right? You know, they're like, oh my God. You know, I was not embarrassed. I was like, I didn't even realize something was wrong with that. I never knew. Yeah. And then Rudolph, who went right after me, had a hot dog. So he got it too. You know what I mean? The both of us were like, Rudolph got a hot dog. But I'm just saying is just like, I came from a very non-traditional background, you know, maybe not the safest childhood. I was, you know, things are a little crazy, whatever it was, but that didn't determine my path in life or deter me from what I was doing. And I think people don't realize that. I think people make a lot of excuses. I had a tough childhood. This happened, that, you know what? It's not your responsibility as a child to fix your childhood wounds, but it is your responsibility as adult. And I do that. You're not responsible for what happens to you as a child, but as adult, it's your responsibility to fix it and not carry it into the next generation either.
Wow. I think that that is such amazing advice to just create that accountability of like face your truth and fix it. We are so fortunate now, right? You know, now versus how it was in the past. You know, just when you think about people with PTSD and like that didn't even exist, that wasn't even a thing. But now we can say what it is and when we can address it, there's resources. There's so many resources out there. So did you at one point in your adulthood kind of stand up for these wounds, if you will, to heal them? And how did you go about healing them?
Listen, obviously I've been in years of therapy. I mean, who doesn't love their therapist? You know, it was important for me to make my mother validate. You know, people will say on the internet, if she's throwing her mother under the bus. I'm not throwing my mother on the bus. I'm trying to have people relate and see that you could have a complicated relationship with your mother, still love her very much, move past these things. I didn't realize anything was odd about my childhood until I got older. I thought it was very normal and all of those things. And then, but I did. I needed her to validate the way I felt. She did. Just very simple things. I didn't like that she drank when I had a child. I was like, you will not drink around my child or you will not be around my child. Those are hard boundaries to set. I learned to set boundaries. I think it's hard for people to do that. It, you know, things could go in either direction. I didn't like that she drank, so I did not drink. I changed that in my life. Some people will then drink and replicate what their parents did, right? I think you have to be very self-reflective. Right. If you don't, it's hard. I think therapy is a big help.
And when you opened that door to really a mutual understanding and boundaries with your mother, how much of a journey was it where you felt like you guys were on the same page and had mutual understanding? How long did that take?
It took a while. It's years. It's years. Some things still trigger me. This isn't saying like everybody's all of a sudden healed and, you know, things are great. Do we still argue sometimes? Do things still trigger me? Do I still get upset? But it's just knowing where it comes from. It's pretending, you know, people pretend it's not happening or brush it under the rug or don't know where it stems from. It's just talking about it, getting it all out, being very raw and authentic about it. I can't stand when people are pretending it's not happening or denying it or something like that. It's better just to get it out. I always say, let's fight it out and get it over with.
Yeah. And how are you going to be this successful entrepreneur if these things aren't being addressed? Like, so what I want our listeners to realize is when you really look up to an entrepreneur and you really want to learn, uncover who that person is in their entire life, what's the full picture? The more in touch they are with their personal relationships and the more that they navigate those effectively, there's no perfect criteria to be successful, but I do think if you're very good at taking care of yourself, it goes a long way. You know, I just was reading about this idea of transgenerational healing, this concept of the more I heal myself, the more my parents will just heal just organically. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I just want to keep healing myself, because if my parents can benefit from that, just because I'm putting that out in the universe and it'll make my relationship with them stronger, it's a win-win. So now I'm even more motivated, because it's not even about my success or my healing. It's my family. It's the people I care about. And so just keep taking care of yourself and a lot of other things fall into place.
It's true. And I think, you know, people, I think boundaries are healthy. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think people have such a hard time having deep, intimate conversation. People aren't in the moment. I think it's very important to be in the moment and discuss having hard conversations. There's nothing wrong with that. I have a lot of hard conversations. Do I like to always have them? No, but I just put it all out there. And I think it makes it much easier. I think a lot of people live with shame. Mm-hmm. But which is hard. So they like to pretend everything's perfect, and that doesn't help anybody. You're not helping yourself. You're not helping your family, and you're not helping even in business.
Well, listen, a big theme of this show, I really am very proud to call myself the Opportunity Coach. I want to create opportunity through listening to this podcast. And opportunity comes from inspiration, from ideas, from motivation, from learning. And I want to just hit on any of these things that I can. And resiliency just keeps coming up more and more when speaking to you. It's huge.
Yes, it is. And I think it's such an underrated quality that we don't talk about enough. Resilience is so important, and people have to work on their resiliency, and taking care of yourself helps you be resilient.
Yeah, exactly. Taking care of yourself literally creates resiliency. Sometimes in life, you just have to ask yourself, okay, if I do this, this will just happen as an after effect. So like, just do it, right? Like, you don't have to worry about how it happens. It just does. Like, that's just the way it works. And that's what I love about these takeaways, because you just don't realize while you're doing it that that's going to necessarily be the outcome. You just, I think, give people that push to do the work, heal the relationships, have the hard conversations, and great will come from doing those things.
Yes.
I love it. So this is been an amazing conversation.
I loved it. This was like healing. This was like deep in business therapy.
Oh, good. Good. Channeling my Oprah. I love it.
I love it. You're going to help so many people.
So you live in New Jersey or anywhere even outside of New Jersey. Where can I get Drink Soiree? You have your website.
I have my website. We're in Chicago. We're in Texas, but we're in New Jersey. You could go to the Buy Right liquor stores, and Gary's. And Gary's liquor stores. We're on premise at the Brownstone Pancake Factories as well. So Buy Right's, Gary's, Brownstone Pancake Factory, online at drinksoiree.com. And we're branching out into all other areas.
Outstanding.
All other states, soon to be global.
Well, Margaret Joseph, her book is Caviar Dreams on a Tuna Fish Budget.
That's it.
It's very entertaining, also very inspiring. You have your Macbeth collection as well as Candy Couture. I'm going to now feel so much better when I drink Soiree, being part of the party. But, you know, sometimes it's just, you don't need to drink the alcohol. Got to get up the next day. I don't need to deal with the hangover, right?
It's absolutely true. You're going to feel a lot better, Nick, when you get up in the morning. But if you want to spike it, you can. I'm not going to judge.
Yeah. Well, when you are struggling to pick yourself back up or to stay resilient and keep on keeping on, think about Margaret's story. She is continuing to be a success, going through a really difficult industry to be a successful business, and learning as she goes. And so thank you for the time, Margaret. This has been a really enjoyable conversation.
Oh, thank you so much. This was amazing. Thanks, Nick.
You got it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.